So last week we shared the names and some images of people who've come before us, some ancestors by genetics and some by other connections. We honored their lives and their memories. For some of us, like I named for myself last week, it might have been difficult to call an ancestor to mind or to do so without some remembered harm. It's a complicated thing to dig into our personal histories, and sometimes there are landmines. If this is true for you, if you are triggered into difficult emotions by last week or this week, please reach out to me or someone else you trust to process that with you. That is more or less what I've been moved into talking about today, the hard things about holding our history. I have my own demons. Parents who grew up in Germany in the 1930s and 40s, including a father who, as I often simply say, fought for his country, which means that he fought with the Nazi army. Grandparents and piblings, which are siblings of my parents, I barely knew, and my own parents' silence about our family history, which kept me disconnected from it while I was growing up, and continues to keep me pretty uninterested. A childhood family system of unvoiced expectations and disappointment when they're not met that's manifested in me as a distrust of my own instincts. A 1970s education that's resulted in a whitewashed understanding of the history of colonialism and genocide in our country's founding and settling. A lifetime of swimming in the water of white supremacy culture and American individualism, which have taught me to believe that I deserve the privileges I have and left me with a diminished capacity for compassion for my non-white siblings, as Carol Powder talked about. In that water, waves of a consumerist society that values productivity over care, and a religious background that worshiped a man who was persecuted and killed for the radical idea that we should love each other, and claimed that the sacrifice of his life made up for everything I could possibly do wrong. Phew! In this month's Soul Matters packet on the theme of holding history, the Reverend Scott Taylor wrote something that resonated deeply with my experience. Maybe it will for you too. He says, very few of us have pasts without pain woven through. And it's just easier to shut out those traumatic times than confront them head on. We are all well taught in the game of sweeping old wounds under the rug. And of course, he says, there's the unprocessed horrors woven throughout our cultural history. They're the rule, not the exception, but we work hard to close ourselves off from them with standard lines like, at our best, this isn't who we are, or as Americans, we're better than this. The truth is, he writes, we've never consistently been better than this. Amnesia, rather than a courageous and honest reckoning, describes the current character of America's heart. So I have been trained my whole life to gloss over or get over the things in my history that are hard. In some ways, mostly surface ways, that has served me pretty well. I've honestly thought when I was going along with that training before I knew any better, that I've had it pretty easy in terms of not getting away with having to deal with much grief or emotional labor. My family of origin had, after all, been together and stable. I'd had everything I needed growing up and access to the training I needed to make a decent living. So life was pretty good, and I didn't understand why I was sad and angry all the time. So because I'm a curious person, with the means to get answers to my questions and about the world, I started learning some truths that contradict what I had been taught. And that's when the glossing over and the getting over really began, right? Because protectiveness and defensiveness are instinctive responses to the possibility of danger. And it was dangerous to my peace of mind to understand the brokenness in both my family and national histories. My home church was next to railroad tracks, and invariably a train would come while somebody was preaching, and we would just go, train meditation. So, plain meditation. So it was dangerous to my peace of mind to understand the brokenness in my family's and my national history. It would disrupt the status quo, which we're taught not to do, right? But more important to me personally, it would take deep, deep emotional and spiritual work to find the truth of who and what I am based on who and what my family is. Healing some of that brokenness might actually mean feeling it. That's scary. So for a long time, I kept up the protecting, the defending of my heart, and I acted out. I did self-centered things, I did harmful things to myself and others, and I started to have panic attacks. And then I met another human who was interested in having a deeper relationship with me that would require some opening of my heart. And we all know once we open our heart to one thing, it's impossible to keep it closed to others. After I had acted out in ways that hurt him, he offered me forgiveness with the condition that I learned more about myself and my history. And the journey I'm still on now, 30 years later, began. Scott Taylor also writes, all of which is to say that there is a deeper relationship between history and vulnerability that we often recognize than we often recognize. Without a heart willing to feel pain and endure grief, the fullness of our histories just can't enter in. Talking about past mistakes requires the ability to vulnerably say, I'm sorry. An honest telling of racism requires the painful acceptance that some of us still benefit from the prejudices and oppression of our ancestors. Healing historical racism requires someone suffering the cost of reparations. And telling your full story requires navigating grief over choices you wish you would have made differently. So for me, with time, deep relationships with humans who hold compassion for my fears, growing trust in my own intuition and instincts, and the embracing of a faith tradition that values care over productivity, I'm learning to admit to the things in my history and my family's history and my nation's history that would be easier to gloss over. The Buddhist scholar, systems thinker, and eco-feminist Joanna Macy teaches about a spiral journey she calls the work that reconnects. There are four aspects to this journey, and the first two, which is most of what I'm talking about today, are described like this on the Work That Reconnects website. The spiral begins by coming from gratitude, because that quiets the frantic mind and brings us back to source, stimulating our empathy and confidence. It helps us to be more fully present and open psychic space for acknowledging the pain we carry for the world. In owning and honoring our pain for the world and daring to experience it, we learn the true meaning of compassion, to suffer with. We begin to know the immensity of our heart-mind. What had isolated us in private anguish now opens outward and delivers us into the wider reaches of our inter-existence. So the two steps are grounding in gratitude and honoring our pain. I've shared before that one of the deepest learnings from my own experience of becoming divorced from my partner of 20 years was the ability to feel all the emotions that came during that process. It was the hardest thing I've ever done, to open my heart enough to feel the pain and the rage when they were happening, when every instinct in me was shouting to shut it down. But the end result was that I actually processed those hard feelings, and I'm not afraid of them anymore. And my heart is more flexible now. It has been exercised in a big, deep way, ready to open to the warm and nurturing feelings that are also possible. So last week, I also encouraged us to consider those for whom we are ancestors. Even with the practices of gratitude and owning and honoring our pain, we continue to do things that our descendants will have to live with. And some of them, they might have to forgive us for. Opening our hearts to the mistakes of our ancestors does not preclude us from making our own mistakes. Sometimes we learn from them and turn toward doing better. Sometimes we don't. And we perpetuate harm because we're not willing or able sometimes to do things differently. Those for whom we are ancestors are inheriting a world with deeply damaged ecosystems and a changing climate that might eventually be inhospitable to human life. They're inheriting the impacts of enslavement and genocide of millions of people, just as you and I have inherited them. They're inheriting consumerism and poverty and racism and capitalism, and will have to do their own work to feel the harm we cause and its impact on them. Wouldn't it be amazing to also pass on practices of gratitude, honest grieving of our mistakes, and reconciliation? Next week, I'll be talking about some of the specific points of our Unitarian Universalist and our nation's history that I think are important for us to acknowledge and process. For now, I'll close with words from the Quaker author, educator, and activist Parker Palmer. He writes, "Jewish teaching includes frequent reminders of the importance of a broken, open heart, as in this Hasidic tale. A disciple asks the Reb, 'Why does the Torah tell us to place these words upon your hearts? Why does it not tell us to place them in our hearts?' The Reb answers, 'It is because as we are, our hearts are closed, and we cannot place the holy words in our hearts. So we place them on top of our hearts, and they stay there until one day the heart breaks and the words fall in.' My wish for you and for me is that we can practice opening our hearts enough to allow the holy words and deeds of our collective and individual histories fall in. That we can create and feel within and between ourselves the love that our universalist ancestors knew, the love that holds us all, always. Because only then, when we've acknowledged the harms and forgiven ourselves and our forebears, will we move forward into healing for ourselves, our community, our planet, and our descendants, so that we can build the world of peace and equity that we all need and we all deserve. May it be so. May we be so."